Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Doctrine Detox Podcast. This is episode number 28, and today I'm joined by Aaron Arnold. How are you doing, Aaron?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing just fine. So today is a really fun episode because if you listen to the episode with James Trout a couple of weeks ago, he kept talking about his cousin who kept trying to convert him in the sandbox or while they were playing together or something like that. And this is that cousin. So I'm super excited to hear that story from the other side, from the religious cousin side, because that's the side that I came from. So without further ado, I'm super excited to get into this. What would you say your religious background is?
Traditionally, I'm a Southern, or was a Southern Baptist. The family I was raised by was pretty traditionalist Southern Baptist, so that was instilled into me from a young age up until the point that I stopped being religious.
Mm-hmm.
As a kid, I think it mirrors a lot of what you kind of explained in the previous one. It was a very, religion ran a lot of the household. It was a very important tenet in everything that we did, all the decisions that we made. It was twice on Sundays, once on Wednesday night, kind of church-going family. So it was pretty well ingrained into the younger days, for sure.
Yeah. Sounds very similar to my upbringing. All of the extracurricular stuff that I was allowed to do outside of my very homeschooled life was church. So I was there almost 7 days a week.
Absolutely.
So, and you were fine with that? Like you didn't really question it until later? Or was it the kind of thing where you just sort of begrudgingly were involved?
I think like most kids, I didn't necessarily really enjoy the activities because I would probably rather be doing other things with my Sunday time.
Right.
But I think it was pretty well taught to me from a young age that it was an important part of what we did. It was kind of like a duty that you had to fulfill as part of the family. And I got up and put the clothes on and went, and I just looked forward to the more casual days. It wasn't until the early teen years when you really start to kind of form your own opinions and kind of figure out what the world is like at that point when I started to really turn away from it.
Definitely. So did you ever hold any kind of like leadership position or volunteer position in your church?
No, I never went up the ladder. I was always just there to be with family and to listen to the sermon and make sure I absorbed as much of it as I could and then go home and live as much of it as I could. That was more my role.
That sounds good, honestly. I wish that had been me.
I can imagine it gets a lot worse when you're doing the more almost managerial side of the church.
Oh yeah, because not only then are you expected to be at church every Sunday and absorb everything, but you're expected to live that out and be able to teach that to other people and be an example of it. And you know, it's hard to do. It's impossible to do.
It's a lot of pressure, especially on a kid, for sure.
Definitely, yeah. I'm glad that you were able to just kind of stay at that just going to church level. That's good. So what would you say that your current belief system is?
If you wanted to get real technical with the terminology, I would say I would be an agnostic anti-theist.
Agnostic anti-theist. Could you get into that?
Yeah, so agnostic would be that I can't say for certain whether there is or is not a God, so I lean more towards the I don't believe that there is currently because there's not enough evidence, but if evidence were presented to me, I could believe in one.
Mm-hmm.
And then anti-theist is more about how I view the impact religion has on the world. And I personally am of the opinion that the world would probably be a better place without it as a whole. Just me personally feel that way.
Okay. So how did you get here? what was the process of going to convert James in the sandbox to now you are agnostic anti-theist?
Yeah, when I was younger, I was a lot easier to convince with a lot less sound reasoning and logic, and I didn't really question kind of the thought processes the adults went through to give me answers to questions that I had.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot easier for me to just parrot it back, and that's what happened with James, honestly. Because when that story happened, we were probably 5, maybe 6 years old, so neither of us were really old enough to like understand the gravity of any of the discussion that we were having. And I was just convinced that I knew the answer, and I knew his family wasn't as into that answer as mine was, and the best thing I could do for him was convince him to also be part of the movement or the church or whatever. it's crazy looking back, because I mean, having absolutely no understanding of what we're talking about beyond just what I've been told by other people, that's a lot of weight to put on another human being.
Absolutely.
I really didn't ask for it.
Absolutely. I was laughing too because I relate so hard to that, and specifically to your end of the story. I know you probably heard James's episode, but for those who didn't, I was also in the position that Aaron was in, where I was the super religious cousin trying to convert my less religious cousin. And there were several times when I would be like, "Hey man, have you ever called your brother a fool?" And he'd say, "Yeah, I have." And I'd say, "Well, then you're going to hell, because that's what the Bible says." And I'd get in a lot of trouble with his mom for that, which is super funny now because I don't really keep in contact with him much, but now he is super religious and I am not.
Interesting how that works, isn't it?
Yep. I think we rubbed off on each other to a certain degree.
Almost flip-flop.
Yeah. So what was like your opinion of James when you were a kid? Like, were you always like worried for him, or was it the kind of thing where like you just wanted to be, you wanted to tell him that he was going to hell? Because I know sometimes that was my motivation.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot closer to the first one. James and I, he currently has siblings. Back then he didn't have any other than a step-sibling, and I don't have any siblings. I'm an only child, so we were kind of the closest thing we had to siblings directly at the time. So for him, it was a lot of worry. Like, I truly believed everything I was being told. Like, I thought for sure that he was just going down the wrong path, and if I didn't help him get to the right one, there was some awful end at the end of his tunnel.
Yeah.
It was definitely more of a worry.
that's super relatable, honestly. That's kind of the same thought process I had for my cousin when I was a kid, and I was always the weird cousin at all the family gatherings. Like, I had a very religious family, obviously, but like even then I was the weird cousin.
I was the black sheep of the family even back then. It exposed itself more the older I got, with like the music I ended up listening to and the clothes I liked to wear and stuff. But even back then, I was definitely the black sheep of the family, so I understand that.
Oh yeah. So would you say that there was like a particular turning point in your belief system where you were like, "Huh, that doesn't make sense. Maybe I should research that a bit more," or like what was the process there?
Yeah, I think a lot of it kind of coincided with the formative teenage years, when you really start to look at things from your own lens, mm-hmm. and less of just a regurgitated form of what everyone else is telling you. There was a loss of a grandfather, not one that we share, but one from my mother's side, when I was about 14. I'm sorry, my father's side. And at that moment, kind of the answers I was getting from my family of how to deal with the grief and how to handle that death and just the feeling of losing a person, their answers rode so much on, "Well, just trust the plan," and, "Well, it's just what God said, and it was his time." Those answers just weren't sufficient for, like, I'm sure you can relate, that internal grief you feel when you lose somebody.
Absolutely.
And that from there, I just started poking larger and larger holes into kind of the rhetoric that Christianity specifically uses to kind of put you in those boxes of you needing the overseer to help you through this stuff. And I just wasn't a big fan of that, seeing as how nothing had really given me a reason to think that was how that worked. And it just expanded from there.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I know for me personally, the loss of the death of a family member wasn't really the catalyst for me, but more the, I wouldn't say the death of my family, in that, like,
sure,
my family unit, like my parents were split apart, and like half of my siblings went with my mom and half of them went with my dad. And so from there, like, I saw the reaction of the church, and I saw the reaction of like fellow Christians and how they looked at my parents and how they perceived my family, and they didn't understand the situation. And that was sort of like the beginning of mine. So definitely loss is always a turning point one direction or another when it comes to either being even more religious or not religious at all. So no one can blame you at all for that.
It's interesting that you mentioned the separation. My parents also divorced when I was at a fairly young age.
Yeah.
And in doing so, my mother moved in with my grandparents, and that was when the religion really cranked up. Mom was fairly religious, but she didn't practice it quite as outwardly as they did. But when we moved in with them, they were the pay tithes every week, support the church any way you can, carpool people to church to get them there kind of thing. Like, that was when all of mine really ramped up into being a prominent part of my life.
You know, interestingly enough, the same happened here. Not exactly the same as you, but both of my parents moved back in with their parents because my family was so big and they couldn't find a house to put all of us into that we moved in with our grandparents. And of course, my family was very religious, but then when all of this went down, my mom especially, which is who I ended up going with, sort of cranked it up to 11. You know, everything, we had to pray about everything. We had to, you know, save and scrounge everything. And we tithed and offered to the church because we were under the impression that, you know, with tithes and offerings come more blessings, as the church will often tell you. And with that cranking up sort of came my cranking down. It's like, whoa, hold on now, brother.
You could see the overcorrection and they couldn't almost.
Oh, yeah. And I think I made the equivalence one time where I said, you know, all this praying that we're doing, we're praying to God, but we could say the exact same words and with the exact same fervence to that light pole out there, and it would have the exact same effect. And my parents, or my mom, did not like that too good.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure that went over really well.
Really, really well. And of course, by that time, I hadn't deconverted. I still called myself a Christian back then, but, you know, that was sort of like the starting point for me, was the efficacy of prayer, and like nothing was happening no matter how holy we thought we were.
Just seems like an effort in futility sometimes.
Definitely. 100,000%. Yes. So what has been your experience with your own friends and family since your deconversion?
Fortunately or unfortunately, with friends, we moved around a lot once the separation happened. My grandfather moved a lot for work, so we ended up shifting between South Carolina and Virginia. So friends were kind of it just happened and then didn't, and then new ones happened kind of thing for a long time. Then once I got into middle school, you kind of start gravitating toward people with similar interests. The kind of music that I listened to generally attracted less religious people. I was big into the rock and the metal, things like that, so the friends that I found at that point were either a-religious or non-religious, so made that really easy. Family was a bit more turbulent, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Yes.
My mother handled it okay, but she didn't really hold these beliefs as tightly as my grandparents did. My grandparents did not enjoy, as I got older, kind of how brazen I got about how not religious I was and still living under their roof. So I would play online games as a teenager, and I would explain, like, Jesus as my upsetness to what had happened in the game. And after a while, they turned the internet off.
Oh,
they were like,
gracious.
Well, if you're gonna say stuff like that in our house, you're not going to use it here.
Oh,
to which, me being a 16-year-old, I went and made some kind of real snarky Facebook post about how if you let go of your fairy tales, you might care more about the people in your life, or something real melodramatic. Like a teenager And somebody caught wind of it, sent it to my grandparents. I came home from school with it printed out on my pillow and was told I had to go back to the other house to live back with my mother to finish out my school career. So that was really turbulent. They eventually got over it. I think part of me thinks they believed it was this like teenage rebellion and I was going to grow out of it and I'd see the light and come back to the faith. But by the time I hit 23 or 24, they realized that wasn't going to happen. I think they decided they'd rather have me in their life as a non-religious person than shun me for not being religious.
Well, that's good. At least your grandparents are more welcoming of you now. Is your mom also, you know, still talking to you? You still have a solid relationship with her?
Yeah, mom never lost the faith, pun intended. She stuck with me through it all. It was very much, you know, I'm your mother and I'll love you through anything. I don't support the decisions that you make, but, you know, it's your life, but I'm not going to disown you or something because you chose not to follow my religion.
That's good.
Through the years, she's come around. Most of the family just doesn't talk about it when I'm around, and that solves a lot of the problem.
Yeah, that's kind of how it is with my dad's side of the family. My dad is very well aware of my religious beliefs. In fact, he subscribes to this podcast and is listening right now. Hi, Dad.
Oh, hi.
But I'm pretty sure, like, my grandparents on my dad's side of the family and like my aunts and uncles are aware of my beliefs, because I'm not closed about it. Obviously, I'm the host of this podcast. I have to be very open about my beliefs. But with my mom's side of the family, it started off as I came out as bisexual. And then my mom was like, let me send you every Bible verse for why you're wrong. And then from there, it kind of snowballed and snowballed and snowballed until now we just don't talk. I don't talk to my mom. In fact, I don't talk to anybody on my mom's side of the family, grandparents, aunts, uncles, anybody, which is sad. But I know that for me, family, at least the highest quality family, is the family that you choose. And it can be family like that you're related to, like my dad and my grandparents and that side of the family, but also people that I have met since deconverting have been some of the highest quality people and people that I do consider to be family. So, you know, that's I was about to ask you about your advice for deconversion, but that's mine, is you don't necessarily have to worry about blood family because family is all around you.
I think that's really important. And I think it's funny, it's purely anecdotal, but I feel like people that leave religion has an even deeper understanding of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of religion, especially in a family unit, is built on you do this because the family does this. Like, it started from a young age. You never really form a conscious thought other than I am religious in a lot of those situations. So when you leave that, you realize kind of harm is probably a little bit of an aggressive word for your average situation, but harm is what I use when we consider what religion can kind of do in those situations and force you and manipulate you into things that maybe you wouldn't have done regularly.
Yeah.
So when you get out of that, you start to see what people that genuinely care for you and genuinely want you to do well and succeed, what that relationship feels like. And it definitely feels stronger than some of those forced family relationships, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree 100%. So that's my advice. And what you said was excellent too. Piggybacking off of that is, you know, even if you lose family over your deconversion, you haven't really lost family. You've lost people who only consider themselves to be your family if you meet a certain condition, but there will be other people who will accept you as you are. That being said,
absolutely.
Do you have any advice of your own that you'd like to give to people who are in the process or maybe questioning leaving religion?
I think for me, especially when you're first beginning that transition, the fact that you're questioning it is the first step. Because I think getting out of it, if I were to give advice, especially if I were to look back at like 14, 15-year-old me trying to traverse this landscape and figure it all out, like the best advice would be to just question everything and don't accept half answers or appeals to emotion. It feels like religion, and again, I speak mostly about Christianity because that's my experience, it just relies so much on making you throw out logic in favor of emotional impulse.
Yeah.
And if you can just break down that barrier without it, it's so easy to see through the facades that are set up to keep you in that system. Like, I just look at how the people that are supposed to be models of this religion treat people that they don't agree with. Look at how LGBT people are treated in churches. Look at how any marginalized group that isn't part of the cloth or part of that unit, just look at how they talk about those people and then listen to what they preach on Sundays and see if it really lines up with what they're supposed to be living. Because for me, it never did. And that was really what started me down that path.
Absolutely. Yeah. paying attention is key to life in general, but especially here in the process of deconverting and leaving religion. And I think that was very astute advice. So thank you for that.
Well, I would add one caveat as well, if I may.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
For me personally, after I kind of, again, lost the faith, for lack of better terminology, philosophy is something that I got into as I aged. Like in high school, it was a little heavy. But once I got through college and kind of got into the workforce and dealt with your normal stuff like dread and dealing with life and just the heaviness of everything that you deal with, philosophy was a really good fallback for me to kind of figure out how I viewed the world and what helped me build my core thought processes.
Mm-hmm.
And getting to the bottom of that can give you a lot of just personal internal peace. Just having that wherewithal does a lot for your mental fortitude, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know a lot of the people that I've spoken to, both on and off of the air here in the show, have since replaced religion with philosophy. I know a lot of people will call it like Buddhism or something along those lines. It's like people will say, oh, I'm Buddhist without Buddha or whatever it is they say. But literally, it's just they're adopting the philosophy of Buddhism. And that's totally acceptable. That's totally fine to look at a philosophy and call that your quote-unquote religion, just basically however you live your life. but I think the most...
Everybody has their core tenets, right? It's just a matter of where we get them from.
Definitely. One of the most harmful things we can do, though, is put labels on things. So that's why I try to be very careful when I ask, like, what is your belief system now? You can say words like agnostic and anti-theist, and that totally makes sense. But also, like, people have different definitions for those words.
Sure.
And even now, different definitions for religion versus philosophy or really anything. You don't have to put a label on yourself. Just understand what you believe and try to live that as best you can, and you will be doing better than 90% of the world is right now.
Absolutely. The introspective is really important, just to make sure that you keep yourself course corrected.
Well, Aaron, I think that's all the time that I have for this show today, but thank you so much for being on the show. So glad you could join us, and I'm really glad we're able to get that part two from James's episode. And don't forget that you can follow me on social media, on Twitter at Doctrine Detox and on Instagram at Doctrine Detox Pod, and I'm newly on Reddit r/Doctrine Detox. If you're interested in supporting the show, you can for free by leaving a 5-star review wherever you're listening to this episode right now. Or if you want to support me directly, you can through Patreon at patreon.com/Doctrine Detox Pod. I have plans as low as $1 a month to support the show, and $3 and more gets you great benefits like episodes a day early and access to Ask Me Anything posts, where you can ask me anything under the sun, doesn't have to be about religion, and I will answer to the best of my abilities. Now, you can still listen to the show outside of Patreon. Some people have been getting confused about that. You can listen outside of Patreon for free anywhere, but if you want to support me, that is a great way to do so. With that being said, thank you so much, folks, for listening, and never, ever forget that everything is going to be okay. The Doctrine Detox podcast is written, recorded, and produced by Adrian Cardwell. Special thanks to this week's guest, Aaron Arnold. Original intro and outro music is Doctrine Detox by Adrian Cardwell.